Hello and welcome to Coven,
where we're curating our dream Coven roster.
I'm Riley.
And I'm Jenna, and we're your hosts.
Welcome. Episode 7.
Yes, 7.
Right? Yes. There's not even that many, but I like can't keep
every single time. We're getting up there though.
I know.
Do you have tea with you today? I know you're traveling, so maybe not.
No, there's no kettle. There's no there's no way for me to have hot water. So
that's okay.
I have water.
I'll drink mine for you.
I know.
It's lavender.
Yum.
Lavender mint.
Just
today.
Lavender. Oh, okay. That sounds great.
Riley's coming to us live from San Francisco.
Yes. I'm here for work and it's been really, really lovely. And yeah, so that's why the change of scenery for our YouTube watchers and potentially shitty sound because of my makeshift mic situation. So bear with us this week.
I'm excited about this episode. I think you're gonna love her. So should we start with magic moments?
Magic moments, yes.
This is the part of the show where, if you are just tuning in with us, where we talk about magical moments that happen to us throughout the week. It can be synchronicities or anything that felt beautiful or a time we felt gratitude or anything that felt kind of divine throughout our week. So how about you start? I think I started last week.
Yeah, you did. Okay. It's really nice because I feel like almost every week I have like a lot of different things that I could choose from that feel like positive and good, and that feels really nice. But I'll say my magic moment this week. I'm in San Francisco, and for our listeners who don't know, I am from Northern California. I'm from like about 4 hours north of here. San Francisco has been like a safe haven for me and like one of my favorite places in the world since I was in like middle school. Grew up coming here all the time, and I have like very precious to me chosen family that lives here that I'll be able to see later this week. So I'm super excited about that.
Oh yeah.
And Yes. So I get to stay an extra day after my little work trip out here, see my family and spend some time with them. And there's in the city, there's this cathedral called Grace Cathedral. That's like literally like a 8-minute walk from the place that I'm staying right now, that I've been to multiple times throughout the years. Whenever I've come to visit here, and there's a labyrinth in front of the church there that I've walked and like meditated and prayed, and when praying was a part of my spiritual practice and very much like a core memory for me, like the things that I have meditated on when I've visited there, and like just been thinking a lot about how every time I visit this city, especially in the last, just every time, honestly, I am always like just a very different version of myself in a very different phase of life, a very different place. And just, have been thinking a lot about how I've just changed and evolved and grown into being my own person. Anyway, so I was able to go out there yesterday. It was kind of an off day for us, or I had some free time. So I walked over to the cathedral and I walked the labyrinth and just meditated on the future, like the times in the future that I will come back to that place and what that might look like, and also just really grateful, just felt very, very grateful for why I'm here right now and what I've done to get myself to be here in the situation that I am, with work and everything. And just looking forward to being able to like go back there with my future family, with my partner, and like it's just a really like special place for me, that I have been visiting and revisiting for the last 10 years, which is like so wild. Yeah, so that was just like a really special moment, and it feels really sweet to be able to like revisit these spaces. So that's definitely a magical moment this week.
That's so sweet. It's like a little point of like, like a little checkpoint for you.
Yeah, a little like touchstone. Yeah.
That's so sweet, though. I love labyrinths.
Yeah. I know, me too. Yeah, I feel like, just a lot of, been noticing a lot of portals lately.
Yeah,
that feels definitely like a version of a portal. And like went and saw this movie last night with my coworker that I'm here with, called Nostalgia. It's like a, I guess like artsy film listeners would know this. It's a Tarkovsky film, like a Russian, some Russian director. And it's just, it's just like an art film. And it was just like, the whole thing was just portals. The whole movie was just like, nothing really happens. It's just portals and beautifully shot and stuff. So I feel like that's just like been like a, been consciously on my mind, just portals and
yeah. We love portals.
That's my magic moment. We really do.
Love it.
We really do. Yeah.
Love it.
What's your magic moment this week, Jenna?
So I am kind of piggybacking off of my magic moment from last week about like it has to do with the car, my car being totaled, which by the way, I am fine. Listeners who I realized in last week's episode, I didn't clarify. I'm okay. Everybody involved is okay.
Yeah. Not a big deal.
Anyway, at first when I got into the car accident, I was like so upset because I was like, I do not need this right now. I can't afford another car. I can't afford to get it fixed. Like, I don't know what situation is. I had a really high deductible because I was paying for like the cheapest insurance. It felt like it was all shitty, but I kept telling myself like, you don't know why things happen. Like, trust in your guides. Like, this might have like prevented you from getting into a worse situation or something else. I was just trying to trust it. And then come to find out my car is worth way more than I thought it was, like more than double what it said it was worth online. And it ended up being damaged in just the right amount of way to where it was still totaled. It was still totaled, even though it was worth so much more, even though this was just a small fender bender parking lot accident, somehow it ended up being totaled, which meant that the insurance company paid me the money for it. And it was so much more than I was expecting, so much more than I would have got otherwise. Nobody got hurt. And my car was probably about to break down, to be honest. There was a lot of things happening with it that I would have had to spend a lot of money on. So it ended up just being a huge like blessing. And there's a lot of other things that went into it. But I was like, wow, this is actually like an ideal situation. Anyway, the magic moment comes in because I, you know how TikTok will sometimes have those videos where people are like, this reading is, if you're seeing this reading, if it's on your For You page, this is for you. Usually I scroll past those. Sometimes though, I'm like, wait, this one kind of feels good. And this one was like, you have two guides that are really, really close right now. It's like a grandmother and a childhood friend. And I was like, well, I don't really have any childhood friends who passed that I was super close with, but I do have a grandmother who passed. So I liked the reading, but I just kept in mind the guide thing. It just kind of stuck with me. Anyway, the next time I got into my car, I noticed my mom's car, I pulled down like the sunblock thing shield. What's that called?
Yeah.
Does that have a name?
Is it like a visor? Like a sun visor? That, I don't know.
I have no idea what that's called.
You know, the thing that blocks the sun in your car.
That thing. Yeah, my mom has on it two pictures, one of my grandmother and one of Celeste, who is her best friend, who passed away when I was, she passed away when I was 19, but she was in my life all growing up.
Yeah.
And immediately I was like, oh my God, childhood friend and grandmother.
Yeah.
And then I was like, hold on, wait a second, because my grandma's birthday, my grandma's a Pisces, I know. So her birthday's coming up.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I feel like Celeste had a February birthday also. So I asked my mom, and Celeste's birthday is February 16th, which is the day that I found out my car was worth way more. And I had an amazing day that day. And then my grandmother's birthday is February 28th. So it's in a couple days.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like this window where this really crazy thing happened, and I have this car where they're like so close to me with these pictures. And
Yeah,
that's my magic
moment.
That's
really sweet. I love that. Shout out to spirituality TikTok.
Thank you. Thank you, random girl on TikTok who gave me that.
Yeah.
Wow, so it was accurate. I love
that. Yeah, that's really sweet. Yeah, I love like that, like, childhood friend was, like, your idea of that, I guess, initially would be, like, oh, like, someone I was friends with in elementary school, like, in my class or whatever, and then it turned out to be, like, a friend to you in your childhood, which is, like, a fun, like, sweet twist and way to think about that. So that's really precious.
Yeah. I feel like I'm borrowing my mom's guardian angels for the week.
So we want to hear from you, our listeners. Please send us your magic moments, your synchronicities, your divine moments, your things that you are grateful for, things that have just stood out to you lately, your crazy accurate horoscopes, your spirituality TikTok readings that just resonate with you. We want to hear about it. So please email us at covenpod333@gmail.com and we will read them on the podcast. So
yes, we will. Send them. Okay, so should we get into the blind birth chart reading?
Let's do it. I'm ready.
This is going to be the part of the show where I introduce, before I introduce the person I'm bringing to our coven this week, I'm going to show Riley their birth chart, and she's going to guess the kind of person she thinks they are based on their birth chart. So she doesn't know who I'm bringing to the coven, who I'm welcoming.
The only hint that I know is seance from last week. Jenna told me the hint seance. Which kind of gives me a lot, honestly. I'm expecting a lot of Scorpio.
Oh.
Am I wrong?
You're not,
I'm always
actually
wrong. I'm really bad at this. Oh, okay, cool.
No, you're correct. Also, okay, so this person, there is a day and a year confirmed for their birth time. This person's popular enough for astrologers to take an interest in her because there's no record of birth time, but there's enough astrologers who love her that people, there's like a whole group of astrologers who banded together to figure out when her rising sign would be based on not only her personality but based on like transits and things that were happening in her life and when that would have made sense. And so I'm That's pretty cool. confident in her birth time based on those astrologers' estimates. So she's a Libra rising, Scorpio sun right here, Scorpio Mercury,
That makes sense.
Sagittarius Moon, also Sagittarius North Node.
Just like my gal last week.
Yeah, exactly, and Hypatia. A Libra Venus, which is same as me. Libra Jupiter. Libra Saturn, and then a Mars in Aries, a Neptune in Aries, a Chiron in Pisces, and then her Pluto is in Taurus, her South Node Gemini, Uranus Gemini, Lilith Gemini. Midheaven is just barely in Leo in the 11th house, and Aquarius, IC line. I think that's okay. That's all. So, what are your thoughts?
Piecing together seance, and like I said, I expected a lot of Scorpio, and like totally fucking makes sense. Mercury and Scorpio makes a lot of sense. Mercury being all about like communication, and Scorpio having to do obviously with death and dark mm-hmm. things, and
quite literally
speaking to the dead. Yeah.
I love it.
And a sun being in Scorpio, I mean, just like her core being is like drawn to those kinds of things for sure, so that makes sense to me. There has to be more to her than just like she was a seance person, so mm-hmm. right, like I don't know how much, like last week I remember like I didn't have a lot of information about my person's like relationships and like personal life and stuff, so I don't know how much information you have about hers, but what can we like infer about that from like about her relationships and stuff. I mean, you can tell me, I guess, like as a Libra, Venus, and what was the other thing, her Mars and Aries, what's your Mars? Mm-hmm. Virgo.
My Mars is Virgo.
But you can tell me, I guess, as a Libra Venus, like how that manifests in you.
Yeah. My Libra Venus, I mean, I think because Venus is ruled by Libra. It's one of the signs right. that Venus yeah. rules over. So it's mm-hmm. a very happy placement for Venus to be in. Mm-hmm. So usually that's somebody who is going to embody Venusian qualities a lot. So like mm-hmm. I mean, relationships definitely are going to be very important in their life, but also mm-hmm. like prioritizing art and beauty and
yeah,
a little bit sure. hedonistic. It's in her first mm-hmm. house though, and she has a lot in Libra, so that's I think significant.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I wish I didn't like already know what her deal was, because I'm like
you don't
I don't think know you deal? Do oh, okay no. okay
seance so... is like a very it's not a small, it's definitely a huge part of her story, but it's definitely okay. not her main thing.
Okay, all right, that helps me. So I guess with like all the Libra, what else is in her is Libra,
Jupiter, her
Venus, and Saturn. And Saturn. I don't know anything about those. And a moon in Sagittarius.
Sag. Mm-hmm. In her third house.
I feel like she is a crazy person.
Some would say.
I feel like she is a wild spirit for sure.
Interesting.
Like, all of these, like, just the combination of all of these gives me, like, someone who is, like, very dramatic and out there and seen as, like, eccentric, but not in, like, a, like, Aquarius vibe eccentric.
Yeah.
Not, like, quirky, but just, like, oh, she's, like, a little bit, like, off her rocker, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, well, she was definitely seen that way in her life. Mm-hmm. So I think that's pretty accurate, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. What else we got? Yeah, Mars and Aries.
Mm-hmm.
And with her Libra, which is that? That's opposite, right? Libra and Aries are opposite.
Yeah, yes, correct. Yeah.
I just feel like with those being like the relationship planets, you know, with a Mars and Aries and a mm-hmm. Libra Venus, that I feel like that combination is like just intense and like maybe yeah. confusing for her.
Yeah. Potentially. And it's interesting because Mars is ruled by Aries. So, yeah. mm-hmm. Or Mars rules over Aries.
Yeah.
And Venus rules over Libra. So they're both yeah. in their like domicile signs.
Like they're opposite where they're like exalted. So I feel like they end mm-hmm. up being true to like the like Venetian qualities, true to like Martian qualities.
Yeah, Martian. So, although it's technically not exalted. Okay. That's a different thing than being in its home sign. Okay. It's in its domicile.
Amplified.
In its home sign. Amplified, yeah.
That's right.
It's okay. So Mars is someone, exalted. Yes.
Someone who's very like intense in relationships. I would assume they had like very intense relationships.
Yeah, I imagine so. So okay. Is there anything else that you want to say from her birth chart?
I mean, you keep harping on the Libra, so I'm going to guess that she is an artist of some sort. But I'm really interested to see where this seance stuff comes in. But no, I'm at a loss. I'm just ready to hear who we're talking about. Let's get to it.
Well, you're pretty accurate with that. So okay. Let me stop sharing my screen real quick. Okay. So this week I'm welcoming medium, mystic, prolific painter, and the mother of abstraction, Hilma af Klint, into our coven.
Ooh. Okay, wait, why does that sound familiar? That name sounds familiar.
She's, she's in recent years gotten a lot of fame, I guess.
Okay.
So you may have heard of her. She's a painter. Have you ever seen any of her paintings?
Maybe. Do you have some to show me?
I do. I'll pop them up towards the end, but she has a lot. Towards the end and kind of throughout, I'll try to share my screen and show some paintings, but.
Okay. Yeah. Ooh, I'm excited. I don't know anything about her, but let's go. That's how all of these start. We're just like, I don't know anything about this person. And I love it.
Which I love.
That's the point of this podcast.
Yeah. Just like Lal Dead, I totally fell in love with her doing research. And I have a feeling this is going to be a theme where every single person that I do, I'm just going to be like, this is my new favorite and I'm obsessed with them.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, so Hilma. She was born on October 26th, 1862 in Stockholm, Sweden. Mm-hmm. And she was the fourth child into her family. She's not the last, but she was the fourth child in her family. Her dad was a Swedish naval commander. So her family was pretty wealthy. She spent her summers at her family's lake house. And that's where she was originally inspired by the beauty of nature, which would end up being a very important theme throughout her life and inspiration with her painting. She was super close to her father. From him, she learned mathematics and astronomy. He was a naval commander, so that was his whole thing. So from a young age, spiritualism and science was her passion. And not much is really known about her relationship with the rest of her family. But we know that she was very close with her father and with her younger sister, who unfortunately passed away in 1880 when her sister was 10 years old. Yeah. Well, yeah, Hilma was only 18. I think it said somewhere, but I don't remember. I didn't write that down, but I think it was tragic. She was very, very deeply affected by it. Obviously, her sister was 10 and it was her first kind of experience with death. And she was already, Hilma was already interested in the occult at this point. But this event really intensely triggered it. And made her really want to dive into spiritualism and things like seances, which was not uncommon at the time.
Yeah, totally.
This was a time period where a lot of artists, progressive thinkers, and intellectuals were getting super involved in the occult and performing seances. This was a time when theosophy was first formed, which that's another thing. That I have another person on my list that I want.
Okay.
I'm going to do at some point who will get more into theosophy with her. But anyway, so she got really into theosophy and seances and things. Mm-hmm. Her father died a few years after her sister died. So her father, who she was super close to.
Yeah.
And when the father died in like aristocratic families at that in that time period, the responsibility went to the eldest brother for the sisters. And if the sisters didn't marry, then the eldest brother had to financially provide for them.
Right.
So a lot of the time, older brothers would send their sisters off to school. And that's how these women would get an education, because the brothers were kind of like, I don't really want to provide for you. So how about you go? Yeah. How about you go to school and figure out how to provide for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
So she decided to go to school for art. She was an amazing painter. Mm. She got accepted into the Royal Academy of Fine Arts in Stockholm. She was among the second generation of women, I believe, to ever be allowed into the school.
Yeah, incredible.
And she graduated with honors.
Yes,
Yeah, her time there, her paintings really began as like nature, landscapes, and botanicals. And if you look these up, they're absolutely gorgeous works. She ended up making a lot of money, making her living from these paintings during her life. In things like anatomy textbooks and yeah, like advertisements and things where they needed like realistic paintings or drawings of natural things. But that wasn't what she's now known for. And that wasn't really where her passion was. Yeah. So during her time at school, she met women, her other students, her peers in the program, that would later form the group called the Five, that they called themselves. And this was a group of mediums that would perform seances together and make art with the messages that they received.
That's so sick. I literally almost said that while we were doing it. I was like, I wonder, like, was she doing art of dead people? Or, but I was like, that sounds, like, dumb to say out loud. Dang.
No, not dumb. Okay. That's an understandable conclusion to draw. But it wasn't art of dead people, but it was it was art with the messages that they would receive. They'd then translate it. So they would engage in automatic writing and drawing. So they just kind of like channel spirits.
Okay. If there's one thing I do know about, it's seances and also the late 1800s.
Yes.
I do be knowing about that kind of stuff.
Very aware. So she's doing these seances. And again, it's not an uncommon thing to engage in seances and spiritualism like this.
Yeah.
There was this huge wave in occult practices and theosophy. Yeah. Theosophy was popular, especially with progressive women and artists, because it was kind of the first Christian-centered belief system of the time that empowered everyone. So a lot of these women felt safe to embody it because it was like familiar enough that they could embrace it fully, but it still empowered them and gave them autonomy and independence. Because Theosophy is kind of a reimagined Neoplatonism, which is a fun tie to Hypatia.
Your favorite word.
My favorite word. But it is. It's rooted in Christian mysticism, and it's not really a religion. It's more of like a philosophy or like a belief system society that is centered around the idea that there's truth in all religions, and that spirituality and science are intertwined, and that it all comes down to the one. Yeah, she super buys into theosophy. She like really embodies it and loves it. And then in theosophy, there is this belief that there's like five spirits that are supposedly like the guides or the masters that you can channel. People get a lot of wisdom from them. Anyway, so she's super into this. She's performing these seances. there's this quote that is from an astrologer that I was reading her article. It says, her thirst for spirituality, mediumship, automatic writing, autonomism, which includes messages from the spirit and her guides named Amali, Ananda, Clements, and Esther, became her guides to seek answers about an unknown universe. Hilma attended seances in vogue during the beginning of the 20th century. It was one of the five. Some of her paintings show astrological symbols, perhaps not an astrologer, but nevertheless as a part of her expressive, large and small paintings of symbol swirls and catalog notes amounting to over 1,300 paintings and 193 notebooks.
Wow.
So quite a lot of works, but I just thought it was interesting. Wow. A handful of her paintings include astrological symbols. But the meetings of the five, so these seances that they were performing, I want to talk a little bit about what those looked like. So each meeting was opened with a prayer, which was followed by a meditation and a Christian sermon and a review and analysis of a text from the New Testament.
Okay, so church.
And yeah, basically like church, and this would be followed by a seance. But I just thought it was really interesting, just like the, like the very Christian undertone of the seance, which nowadays would be so blasphemous.
No. That is of the devil. Like,
And I think
that's wild.
I think it was a little bit of the devil for like traditional Christians of the time, but it was definitely not uncommon for these artists and kind of intellectual society to participate. Anyway, so while she was in the five, in 1906, she was 44 years old. So she'd been painting, she'd been doing this art with these people for quite a long time at this point.
Yeah.
It's 1906, and she receives a commission from one of these spirits to prepare a message for humankind. And it's, he says it's, or he, I think it's she, says that it's the most important project that she'll ever do.
Okay.
Hilma immediately accepts this commission. So from 1906 to 1915, she produced 193 paintings.
Wow.
In an attempt to represent the spirit of the world.
Wow.
She said, my mission, if it succeeds, is of great significance to humankind, for I am able to describe the path of the soul from the beginning of the spectacle of life to its end. And that's these paintings, yeah, absolutely beautiful. And I can't wait to show them to you. I'll pull them up here in a second. But they're full of symbols and geometric shapes with significant colors and numbers. So stylistically, this is a quote, they're strikingly diverse, incorporating both biomorphic and geometric forms, expansive and intimate scales, maximalist and reductivist approaches to composition and color. So basically, her paintings are considered to be the first abstract works known in Western history. Let that sink in, because that completely changes art history as we know it.
Yeah, completely. Oh, that's probably how I've heard of her. I've taken, I've literally taken a, like so many art history classes, even though that was like not even anything near my major. But, and like I literally took a history of women in art class. So I'm sure I've learned about her.
I'm
I just don't retain any information. So.
Well, and it's interesting because it's likely that you did not learn about her in your art history classes, and we'll get into that. It's only very recently, like since 2018, really, that she's reached this worldwide massive fame.
Who do you think I am? I was in college in 2018.
Yeah, you're right. So maybe you have heard about her.
Anyway, I probably did.
Anyway, Yeah, so we'll get into that though, and
okay.
the history, a little bit of the history of abstraction, but mm-hmm. she was painting from 1906 to 1914, but she mm-hmm. took a 4-year hiatus from 1908 to 1912. Oh, and wow. there's a lot of mystery as to why, but mm-hmm. coincidentally, we know that she was super involved in theosophy. She really, really mm-hmm. loved theosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Rudolf Steiner is a very big name. He was very powerful in the Theosophical Society, a very high up leader type person. She mm-hmm. really liked his work and his teachings, and she was trying to get a meeting with him for a very long time to
high
show
up
him
in
her
this-
work.
In theosophy world or in what world?
Yeah, okay. In theosophy world, in spiritualism, okay. but specifically in the theosophical world.
Okay.
So finally, he agrees to meet with her. She's so excited to show him her paintings, her work. She thinks that mm-hmm. he's just going to love it because she's been channeling this, and she was channeling, the person she was channeling it from told her this is like a very important project. So she's yeah. like, this is great. You need to see this. Tell me what to do with it. He mm-hmm. finally agrees to meet with her. She provides him like photos for his notebook of her paintings. Mm-hmm. And he's basically like, you shouldn't be channeling. You're not a real medium. And don't show anybody these.
The fuck?
Yeah.
Why?
No one knows. And nobody, there's okay. not like a ton of information about the meeting. But she stops painting after that mm-hmm. meeting for 4 years.
God.
Yeah. So
never
it's
trust
like
a man.
For real. Like, oh, it pisses me off. And you know what makes it worse? Wow. You know what makes it worse? And this is all mm-hmm. this is all speculative, what I'm about to mm-hmm. say, but mm-hmm. a lot of people seem to believe this to be an accurate theory. Mm-hmm. After he had his meeting with her and he had his photos of her paintings that she gave him, Rudolf Steiner took his notebook on travels with him. And later that same year, he ended up meeting Vasily Kandinsky, who mm-hmm. Kandinsky is known as the very first abstract artist.
Mm-hmm.
And his first painting came out in 1910, his very first abstract painting, according to him, came out in 1910. Mm-hmm. And in a letter, he declares himself as the first abstract artist ever. Okay. And it's believed in art history that he is the beginning of abstract art. He's very famous, Kandinsky.
Man.
What yeah. is very interesting is that, one, he likely would have met Hilma at... because Kandinsky was involved in theosophy after he met Rudolf Steiner as well. And he likely would have met Hilma. And he also, a lot of people think that he saw the photos in Rudolf Steiner's notebooks of her work. Mm. So it's a pretty popular theory that he actually was inspired by Hilma's yeah. paintings. Because I her first paintings were like a decade before his.
Mm-hmm.
And before this meeting with Rudolf Steiner, Kandinsky's paintings had nothing to do with abstraction. They were nowhere near the world of abstract art. And then suddenly...
Scammer.
It appears. And if you look at his paintings with her paintings, there's a lot of them that are quite similar. Mm-hmm. Not just his, but other abstract artists who came after wow. as well. And every uh-huh. abstract artist that we know of in art history is male. They're all male.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But wow. she came so many years before anyway, but yeah. people don't want to accept her because of her spiritualist beliefs. There's a lot of other reasons why, but we'll get into that as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's Scammer. Like the whole controversy with her and abstraction. What I think is interesting that I didn't really hear, like obviously it's a crazy thing that this would totally alter art history as we know it if she's the beginning of abstraction. But what I think is even more fascinating and more powerful is that this also would completely change or alter our perspective on what abstract art is and what it means. Mm-hmm. Because if she's the beginning of abstract art, then abstract art is a form of channeling. It's a form to commune with the divine. It's a way to use symbols to convey feelings from other planes and other dimensions.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. So even if that's something that we already feel when we look at abstract art, that just is something that would make it kind of confirm that artistic intuition.
Yeah, concrete. Yeah, definitely. Wow. That's fascinating.
Yeah. And I think that that's what art is, honestly, a lot of the time. Mm. I think that... Hi, Penny.
Yeah.
This is Penelope. Everybody Hi, Penny. Say hello.
She said,
okay, time to go.
That's funny you say that because I just I think I, knowing artists, knowing certain artists, one comes to mind specifically, that should be the motivation behind creating, I think, in general, because creating is such an act of divinity and that is how we express our divinity. But I think a lot of people do twist. I mean, everyone is selfish in certain ways and stuff. And so I think that is the purest motivation to make art.
Definitely.
Is to express the divine the way that the divine guides you. But absolutely not how everyone does it. Not to be shady, but to be shady.
No, definitely. I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, obviously the ego gets involved often in art. And I don't actually think that that's a bad thing all the time. I think it's art is just it's part of humanity. And art is just expressing what it is to be human. And so there's a space for sure for people creating art from the ego. Absolutely. I do think it's at its purest form and most powerful when it's coming from this place.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, so she was just completely, this is for humanity and this is from the divine. So super interesting. There's a clear motif in her paintings of a spiral. And she wrote in her notebooks that eventually she wanted her paintings to be housed and exhibited in a spiral building, or that's what the guide told her that they wanted her paintings to be.
Are they now?
So we'll get to that. So a lot of her paintings depicted symmetrical dualities or reciprocities, like the themes of up, down, in and out, earthly and esoteric.
When you brought up the symmetry, I it clicked in my brain where I remember her from. She's literally on my tattoo inspiration Pinterest board.
Oh shit.
And I literally have been wanting to get a tattoo of her. Well, okay. Me and my partner want to get a matching tattoo of her swans painting.
Oh my God. I wonder if it's there's a lot of swan paintings, but I wonder if it's the one that I have to show an example of.
But because
there's
swans mate for life and whatever. So we were we're going to get this. That's
Oh, that's tattoo. So cute. Well, first let me finish this quote. So, pink and red represent physical and spiritual love. There's the series The Swan and the Dove, which are names of two series of the paintings for the temple, and they're symbolic, representing respectively transcendence and love. So the Swan series represents transcendence, and the Dove series represents love.
That's
it's sweet. Understood.
Well, maybe you should get the doves then.
Well, the Swan is transcendence. So I feel like it's still applicable. It's higher love. Anyway, it's understood as gates to other dimensions. Her paintings call for interpretation on a narrative, esoteric and artistic level, while evoking primordial geometry and humanistic motifs. So let's go ahead and look at some of these paintings.
Let's see some. And if you're not watching on our YouTube, then you can catch these probably on our Instagram. We can post them on our Instagram when this comes out. So go check the Instagram, or you can just look up her paintings. You can also just Google them yourself if you want.
Yeah. I'll definitely post these on our Instagram for sure.
Cool.
Okay. Is this the painting?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. Okay. So.
Yeah. Wait, so what? Blue is feminine and yellow is masculine.
Represents masculine, and the swans represent transcendence. So this one in particular stood out to me because I just felt like before I even really looked into her paintings, in so many of her paintings, I feel like I just understand what she's trying to say without reading anything about it. I did read about the blue and the yellow before I saw this one, so I had that in my mind, but there's more of her paintings that I was like, wait, I think I know what she's saying, which is crazy to me because they are so abstract that I don't know. I feel like I usually have a hard time trying to understand what the artist is trying to say. It's usually like, oh, my interpretation is this, but I never feel like a, whoa, like enlightened. But all of her paintings make me feel that way. Most of them.
Okay. What is this one mean, then?
So to me, this one looks like obviously yin and yang, like, I mean,
yeah, for sure.
Quite literally, but knowing that this probably represents the masculine, this probably represents the feminine. And it was like, okay, so the masculine is kind of like the darkness being held by the light, like the shadow within the light, and the feminine representing the light persisting within the darkness, within the shadow.
Yeah, I love that. And for people who are listening and not looking right now, I'm sure you can just like Google it to find this painting. But so there's like a, there's a white swan on a back, there's a white swan on a black background with blue feet. As Jenna mentioned, the blue represents the feminine, juxtaposed, I believe is the right word, like opposite, as we were talking about, her symmetry is opposite a black swan on a white background with a yellow beak, representing the masculine. So that's
also
what we're talking about here. So
I didn't notice this before, but
the red the and
pink
the pink
versus red. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Red being, what did I say red was? It was,
I don't remember.
Spiritual love, spiritual love versus earthly love or something like that. Anyway, that's just another.
Yeah. So their actual beaks, the feminine, quote unquote feminine swan has like a red beak. The black swan, the masculine swan, has a pinkish beak, and then around that is the yellow and then the blue.
Super, it's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. I just love it, and it's even cooler now having a context.
I love that you already had this and you already like wanted to get it tattooed.
Literally,
you absolutely
for
should
like 2 years.
You should, because it's a literal channeled painting, so it would be a great tattoo.
Yeah, I love it. Anyway.
So I want to show her Dove series. This is part of her Dove series. And I loved this because of the astrology. So if you are not watching it.
Dove? We like have, D-O-V-E?
Yes, it's called their Dove series.
Okay, this, not this what I expected. Cool.
I know. This represents love, supposedly. But before I even read that, what I got from this, because obviously I'm an astrology ho, so I was like, whoa, I feel like I get what she's saying here. So I'm not going to really go in depth with explaining these paintings because they're really complicated and confusing to describe. So if you want to see them, look them up or watch this on our YouTube. But anyway, this one was really interesting to me because knowing what I know about the signs, I took this and I was like, okay, well, these are the first four signs on the zodiac, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, and Cancer. And to me, the first four signs are about the individual and the individual experiencing life for the first time. So Aries is the impulse to exist. Taurus is the first perception of your surroundings and feeling in your body. Gemini is your first awareness and observation, recognition of what you're observing. And Cancer is your first emotional feeling and attachment.
That's really fucking cool. I love thinking about that.
Yeah.
That way.
And that felt like this painting like does represent kind of like the individual and the first experience. Anyway, the next one in this Dove series is this one. And it goes Leo, Virgo, Libra, Scorpio, which are the next four in the zodiac. And these four zodiac signs represent our first connection to the other and other people and acknowledgement of the other person. And if you can see in the middle there, there's like two kind of people. That infinity sign kind of turns into two people. Leo is our first experience with expression for other people and to see how it's received from other people. Virgo is our first kind of judgment and like morality like our moral compass with other people and seeing like, hey, like I did that and they didn't like that, or they did that to me and I didn't like that. Libra is our first like judgment and our first discernment and our first real acknowledgement of like, oh, I'm a person and that's a person, we're two different people and I like them or I don't like them. And then Scorpio is our first emotional attachment to a person, like our first intimate experience with a person. Hi, if you're watching on YouTube, you might notice that we suddenly look very different. We were experiencing some technical difficulties and had to pause and come back to it. So,
yes, here we are, ready to finish.
We're gonna
it
pick
off.
Up where we left off. All right. So where we left off, what we were last discussing was this final painting in this like Dove series. I think there might be more to the Dove series, but in this little, my cat's in here as well. apologies
I
for
heard
her
that.
Commentary. Been a little bit stressed out today. So this last painting in the Dove series, we have the final four on the zodiac. So you got Sagittarius, Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces. And if the first four were about the self experiencing the world, the second four were about self with the other, like in partnership and seeing like the mirror basically of other people in the world, this final one would represent integration. So you have Sagittarius that is about like understanding other people's experience and going beyond. You have Capricorn that's about working together to create a society. You have Aquarius that's about using the society to go beyond, kind of similar to Sagittarius in that way. And then you have Pisces that's kind of about integrating it all and coming back to the very beginning as one, as a collective. And I just think the rainbow and the circle here really represents that like integration of everything.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, and I just think it's so cool because I don't know what she wrote about these paintings. I didn't read about what these paintings were supposed to be about. And obviously I picked these ones because I know astrology and I connected with them. But for me to be able to pick up on something so intensely, I've just never really experienced that, I think, in art before, like that kind of a message without any words or any explanation.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The final.
It'll be interesting to like go back and maybe after this and read what she.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, what she.
What she intended,
you know, says about them.
Which sure. I don't. I'm sure she has in her thousands of pages of notebooks. I'm sure she has it somewhere. But I just didn't like look too far into that. The last painting though that I want to show, and there's so many. If you want to look at more of her paintings, there's more like traditional looking abstract paintings. You can just Google it. You'll find so many. But I really liked this one as well, and I just wanted to show that.
Yeah,
one.
It's beautiful.
It's like kind of
so beautiful.
It kind of looks
like depth of field perspective is really fascinating.
Yeah,
like at the word. On the top part, how you can just as always on my end, apologies for city and street noise. I can't do anything about it.
She's just a city girl. What can you do?
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, so this painting I just really liked. I think this one is called like the woman's something, the female something. But before I saw that, I was like, this kind of looks like female organs, like this mm-hmm. kind of gives like fallopian tubes, uterus vibes, but then the outside looks kind of like phallic, like mm-hmm. it kind of looks like a penis situation. And I just thought that was a really interesting like thing to have, like the uterus, like the feminine looking organs inside like the masculine looking organs, and you have the blue and the yellow here again for the masculine and the feminine, and
I wouldn't necessarily be surprised if that is partially what this has to do with.
I think, like, it does. I think the title of it gave away something, but anyway, I just liked that one because she, a lot of her paintings are like they're like gender uniting. Like a lot of her paintings are about like uniting the masculine and feminine, and not about like masculine feminine as separate, but that they're like the same.
Yeah. So it looks like a tree too. You notice that?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Those are some of her paintings. None of these paintings from this series that were commissioned by the her spirit guide, that was like this big project, none of them were thought to have been released during her lifetime or exhibited during her lifetime. Although in recent years, they found letters that actually state otherwise. And we'll kind of get into that and like the controversy there. But for the most part, her paintings were hidden during her lifetime. And it wasn't until when she died, she left in her will that she didn't want them to be seen for 20 years after her death because she didn't think that the world was ready for them. And she was right. But to back up a little bit before we get there, she, from these letters, is now known to have exhibited in her lifetime to like spiritualism conferences and things. But several times to crowds of people, and it's not really known what the response was. We can only imagine that it wasn't anything that she wanted it to be, or it wasn't anything lasting, because
sounds like it.
Yeah, because it just kind of like nobody really heard about her or knew anything really until the 80s.
Wow.
But for the rest of her life, she ended up moving into a lake house studio. She was still doing these commission works for like the landscape paintings and botanicals to make a living, but she wasn't making any money really. And somehow she like built a lake house studio.
Also, I was going to say the 80s, that's when Edmonia last week's episode.
Oh.
That's when she was rediscovered. Uncovered. As well, was in the 80s. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Okay. I wonder what the astrology was at that point.
Is that Pluto and Scorpio or something?
It moved into Scorpio first in 1983. And it was...
Oh, yeah. Hey, yes. I was right.
Yeah, you are right. So Pluto would have just been into Scorpio. That's interesting. So yeah, it is kind of like, like uncovering... deep
rebirth,
hidden
deep
hidden secrets and things from the past that were previously hidden. You do know things. See, you are an astrologer. Yeah, so she was making a living still with those like botanical paintings and things, but not really like a major living, because most of her time was spent in doing this work that she felt was more important. And so it's believed that this lake house studio that she ended up moving into was funded by her close friend Anna Castle, who is one of the five with her in the Sands group, who was like her very close friend and partner.
We love a historical close friend
throughout her life. And Anna Castle had like a lot of wealth. She came from a wealthy family, and it was like, I think it was like something like connected to her family's property or something. So Anna Castle really helped her out with this. And she ended up moving into this lake house studio with her mother, who was getting sick and who was pretty, like, I think her mother was blind at the time, so she was her mother's caretaker and her mother's nurse, Thomasine Anderson. And Thomasine then became her lifelong friend and partner.
Okay, cool.
And conveniently, Hilma never married or had any children, just had these lifelong friends and partners. But together with Thomasine, she would travel all over the world, and Hilma would speak at these theosophical conventions, and she would attempt to exhibit her paintings to the right people. And yeah, we're just not really sure how it was received or if anything was really lasting. But she continued to do her works, but the major project took place from 1906 to 1915. After that, she was still painting, like, spiritual paintings, inspired paintings, but it wasn't part of her main, like, life's mission project.
Okay.
At 81 years old, she died after complications from a traffic accident, but she didn't die, like, in the traffic accident. It was, like, afterwards. And like, she, like, waited.
Injuries or something.
Yeah, I think something, injuries or something else. But she she supposedly waited to die until her nephew returned from sea, from overseas.
Oh.
So that she could deliver her instructions to him, because she wanted to deliver them to him specifically. Nice. And she, like, knew she was going, and she waited until he got back. She gave him his instructions, and then she died, like, right after.
Yeah. I feel like when you hear that kind of stuff about, like, I've heard stories like that kind of about people who like, know they're on their way out, but they like, wait.
Yeah.
They're, like, waiting for something to happen before they die. And I feel like that is, like, such a specific kind of person to be, like, I know I'm dying, but, like, I'm doing it on my own time because I need to take care of this thing first.
Right.
And I think that's, like, death scares the fucking shit out of me. But I think that that is, like, a really, like, fascinating part of, like, human experience is, like, that specifically of, like, I have to tie something up before I go, you know?
I'm not quite done yet.
Very cosmic and wild.
Definitely. This, like, unfinished business, that's very important. And her, and it was very important. She was not wrong about that. Her instructions to her nephew were, one, that she didn't want her paintings exhibited for 20 years. After her birth, she left him everything, her nephew, which was 1,300 paintings, nearly.
Fuck. He's like, and, what am I going to do with this?
Yeah, he was not happy about it. Because she left him 1,300 paintings and 125 diaries. And because he was, like, her only living family, I believe, at the time. And she was like, you are not allowed to sell any of it. And you're not allowed to show anybody for 20 years.
Wow.
So he was like, all right. Okay. So he keeps them, though. He listens to her. And he tried after she died. So she died in 1944. And then 20 years after her death in the 60s, he starts opening them. And he's like, what am I supposed to do with these? He tries to donate them.
That is like the perfect time for him to start showing her stuff to the 60s.
Yeah, she was right. She knew.
She was right.
She knew. Maybe she was like an astrologer and she saw the like Uranus-Pluto opposition that was coming in the 60s. But or maybe she's just, you know, a medium.
Also that.
But anyway, so he opened them and he, in the 70s, attempted to donate them to the Moderna Museet in Stockholm. This is like the modern Museum of Modern Art in Stockholm. But they were declined without even being looked at due to her reputation with spiritualism and the fact that she had, quote, never exhibited the paintings in during her lifetime.
Wow. That's fucked.
Yeah. Yeah. This
is her art anywhere? Can we go see it?
Yes. Just wait. Okay, just wait. This was in the
70s. I want to go see it.
But yeah, it's like this curator of the Museum of Modern Art in Stockholm, this man was like, didn't even want to think about it because he didn't even look at it. One, largely because of her like reputation with spiritualism and the fact that she was like an automatic painter and she was channeling these. But the truth is like most artists are channeling their work. Like most artists, there's an element of that to it. And they'll tell you that it's like creation is like divine. It's coming from divine, from like another place beyond, and coming through them. And so that just kind of felt like BS. What seems to be most likely is that her paintings would extremely disrupt art history as we know it. And people didn't really want to open that door. They're like, well, it's been like closed for long enough. This person, she never exhibited her work, just finding all these little excuses to not take her seriously.
Yeah.
So just they were
so silly. Like, why?
Yeah. So her paintings, all 1,300 of her paintings, were sitting in this basement for several decades, just unseen, pretty much unseen, until 1986, when finally a female curator decided to exhibit a couple of her paintings in Los Angeles. And it got a decent amount of attention, and she started gaining more and more of a reputation slowly, became like a niche, like cult following.
Yeah.
Kudra, come here. Stop freaking out. You're okay. Okay. And finally, she had her first major solo exhibition in the States at Guggenheim in New York City from 2018 to 2019, which her vision of, I don't know if you remember, I said that in her notebook she wrote that she needed the paintings to be exhibited in a spiral building
because they're spirals. Oh my God. Yeah,
Guggenheim is a spiral. So this manifested in her spiral building. There were over 100 of her works and thousands of pages from her notebooks, or hundreds of pages from her notebooks exhibited, which is like, I think it was the largest exhibit in the States and maybe in the world. I know that in the Museum of Modern Art in Stockholm now, she has, I want to say she has a permanent exhibit there. I have to hold on to her for dear life, or she's gonna do everything in her power to disrupt this.
I'm so pissed. Is her stuff still, is any of her stuff still there?
So no, but we've been wanting it will to be. Go there. So more than 600,000 visitors attended this exhibit at the Guggenheim. It was the most visited show in the museum's history.
Damn.
It received raving reviews, with many people claiming to be deeply touched and moved to tears by her work and just like changed from the exhibit. And there's still hundreds of her paintings and journal pages that are undisturbed that people are actively working through now to have more exhibitions of her work that's never been seen before on the horizon. Super, super crazy. That exhibition at Guggenheim was called Hilma af Klint, Paintings for the Future. I think that there's another one coming to Guggenheim, I want to say in October of this year. So,
oh my God, I'm going
to
look at it.
We don't have too long to wait. Yeah, I know. I don't know if it's, I think it's at Guggenheim, but I know there's one coming in October of this year. So I definitely want to make my way out to see that. Yeah, so she's now very popular in the art world, and people are finally, I think that Guggenheim exhibit really skyrocketed her into the limelight in the art world, and I think they're finally giving her a space in art history.
Also, I just saw that she's showing at the Guggenheim in Bilbao, which is in Spain. So this year...
Then I guess I misread I guess I just read Guggenheim and thought it was New York.
Yeah, no, just Guggenheim and Bilbao, because I guess there's multiple Guggenheims. But yeah, they're like, she's showing in like in Germany and Spain and Sweden.
I'm super bummed that I missed it in New York.
This is why you bebop bop.
Yeah, even exhibitions that you don't know and you don't think you're going to like, you should check them out, because you never know if you're going to end up regretting that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so all of this, such an incredible mystic painter. She's so powerful, so ahead of her time. This is why I've welcomed Hilma af Klint into our coven today.
Yay. Welcome, Hilma.
Welcome, Hilma.
We're both super excited that you're here.
Super excited. Who would she be hanging out with?
Super excited.
What would she be doing?
I know. I was thinking about this before we recorded.
I mean, I feel like because she was a theosophist, which is kind of rooted in Neoplatonism, I feel like she would be geeking out over Hypatia.
Yeah.
I feel like they would love each other.
I feel like almost every week you're like, this person's talking to Hypatia.
That's not true. I feel
she's
like...
the foundation.
No, I don't.
She's the foundation.
No, last week it was with Isadora Duncan. They were
Isadora. You're right. You're moving.
But also, I feel like Hildegard. They were moving together. I also feel like Hildegard would get along with Hilma as well, because they're both like,
oh, absolutely,
kind of medium artist energy.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I feel like actually have a lot of similar views, even though she was like a Christian nun.
Totally.
She was very open to, yeah, everything.
Totally.
So I could totally see that.
Yeah, they would.
That's definitely
work on a painting together.
They're definitely making art together. They're doing some meditative art.
Yeah, for sure.
Practicing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Okay, well, do you want to give a little hint about yours next week?
So my person for next week was recommended to me by my coworker that I'm on my work trip with. Based on one of her pieces of writing, and like what we mentioned earlier, what I mentioned in my magic moment, my little hint for next week is going to be Labyrinth.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And I'll read you that piece of writing next week. So tune in next week.
Thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Bye.
Well, see you next week. Bye. Thanks for joining our coven this week. You can find all sources used in the show notes. Don't forget to rate, review, and follow on all platforms, and like, comment, and subscribe on our YouTube channel. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at coven.pod. Send us your magic moments and witchy recommendations at covenpod333@gmail.com. This has been a Stars Etc. production. Coven is written, researched, and edited by Jenna Scott and Riley Hale. Music by Jeffrey Boyle and Jenna Scott.